College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and to break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the woman and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Purdue head coach Matt Painter. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on Apple Podcasts. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We're the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in this podcast. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And a reminder to find and listen to the College Hoops Today podcast on all the popular podcast platforms. Make sure to subscribe, like, and rate the show. And please feel free to leave us comments. And also check out collegehoopstoday.com for breaking news, insight, and analysis on the greatest sport that we have in our society. And I want to let you know that today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast being sponsored by Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And now we've got you all set for all your Geico needs. It is the preseason in college basketball, thank God. Finally, the offseason previews are starting to dissipate a little bit. Finally, I can get out and see some teams. I was out in California last week, went to Santa Barbara, went to Loyola Marymount, saw UCLA and USC. Loyola Marymount and Santa Barbara, in my opinion, should both have a chance to play in the NCAA tournament from the WCC and the Big West, respectively. UCLA and USC should both be atop the Pac-12. USC looks like an NCAA tournament team to me. There's no Evan Mobley. There's no Onyeka Okwangwu. But Ethan Anderson, the veteran point guard for the Trojans, is in tremendous shape at point guard. Is down 20 pounds, he told me. Changed to a pescatarian diet. He looks like he's due for a big year. Like, obviously, Boogie Ellis, the transfer from Memphis. Drew Peterson is back. Isaiah Mobley is back. I see USC as an NCAA tournament team, a team that should be in the top third of the Pac-12. Now, I also went to UCLA, and there's high expectations, as expected. The Bruins return five starters from last year's team that went to the Final Four, lost to Gonzaga at the buzzer. They also add Rutgers transfer, Miles Johnson, a grad transfer, who could be pound for pound, inch for inch, the best defensive big man in college basketball this year. And they also bring in five-star freshman Peyton Watson, McDonald's All-American. And I think when you add those two players to the returning five that anchored UCLA's Final Four run, you got to look at UCLA like they have seven starters. The Bruins staff was also high on Jalen Clark making a jump. But the guy that really, really had a palpable buzz on the Westwood campus was Jaime Jaquez. Now, I know when people think about UCLA, obviously after the NCAA tournament, they're going to look at Johnny Juzang, and for good reason, because Johnny Juzang willed UCLA to the Final Four. But there is a belief that Jaime Jaquez could wind up being UCLA's best player in 21-22. He was a glue guy for a long time. It seems like Jaime Jaquez is ready to graduate from glue guy status. Now, UCLA was a Final Four team last year. Purdue has those same hopes this year. Now, Purdue brings back everybody of significance from last year's team that was a four seed, lost to North Texas in the first round. What are we going to see out of Purdue now that they're going to have some expectations with a group that hasn't really been through expectations? We'll find out when we talk to Matt Painter, the head coach of the Boilermakers, coming up next on the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Purdue brings back everybody of significance from last year's team that finished fourth in the Big Ten, earned a four seed in the NCAA tournament. Expectations are high, as usual, in West Lafayette. The head coach of Purdue is Matt Painter. He now joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. And Matt, first and foremost, how refreshing is it to have a real offseason?
Yeah, it's, you know, to be able to go and watch guys, you know, play with their high school team or play with their AAU team and just get like a normal evaluation. And the thing we talked about in the previous, you know, situation through the pandemic was it's the same for everybody. So now when you go out, it's like, yeah, does it help you? Yeah, but once again, it's the same for everybody. But it is good. I like seeing them in a lot of different environments to be able to get out. And we didn't have our camps. I think some people had their camps in the summer, so it wasn't like a traditional summer. But it was good to be able to get out and see some of the guys that's committed to you also. You know, you can't publicly talk about them until they sign with you. But it's still good because you did a lot of their evaluations, you know, through huddle or through synergy or getting tape from their high school coaches.
Now, obviously, you said it was the same for everybody last season, but it was obviously a season that nobody else had ever endured. For you personally, as you look back, what was it like going through what you went through a year ago?
I think the first thing that jumps out in terms of just trying to compete is hopefully getting to those games and, you know, not being canceled. And, you know, being the same for everybody was the recruiting part of it. That's what I was talking about in the summer, but not the playing, because other people, you know, had it worse than we did. We were very fortunate, you know, that we got some positive tests in the summer, right. In the fall. Majority of our positive tests were at those times instead of, you know, in the season. But our guys did a great job of just kind of locking in and, you know, keeping things simple and kind of getting ready for each game, knowing, you know, it could be a little dicey on either end. But we only had one canceled game. That was our home game against Nebraska. But when it came to playing, John, it was bringing your own energy. Like, you want to, you know, bring that energy and whatever, but, you know, you want to combat the opposing team's noise. And then, like, you know, you want to feed off of your noise. Well, now this noise is gone, and you got to bring that energy and that passion. And so that was what really our focus was with our guys, just like every other team in the country, is just try to do those things to help yourself get going.
Now, a year ago, you were coming off a difficult season. You didn't make the NCAA tournament because, you know, obviously nobody did, but you weren't in a situation where you're going to qualify anyway because you were 16-15 and two guys who were key parts to an Elite Eight team in 2019, Matt Harms and Nojel Eastern, transferred and left your program, and you came back losing those two key players and finished fourth in the Big Ten with a team that was really together for the first time. You don't need vindication because obviously the coaching career that you've had and the run you've had at Purdue, but did you feel vindicated after what you went through from a personnel perspective a little over a year ago to have the season that you did last year?
Yeah, I felt fortunate more than anything that, you know, like Zach Edey was ready to play, and that was something he talked about in his recruiting, that he wanted to play. And I told him, you know, with Travion and Matt coming back, well, you can play, but you got to beat one of them out. And, you know, and he was gung-ho about that. He was like, you know, I want to play right away. So that created an environment, you know, for him where he was going to play no matter what. It would have been really interesting if he was still here because Zach's a tremendous player. And Zach's, you know, he's competitive and really takes things in. So that really helped him. You know, Jaden Ivey being able to come and playing a lot. You know, Mason Gillis is a redshirt freshman. Brandon Newman is a redshirt freshman. Ethan Morton and Jaden as true freshmen to go along with Zach. So we had those five freshmen, and it just really gave them opportunities. Ethan ended up having to battle mono, and he ended up being kind of the odd man out in our rotation. But, you know, I'm excited about him. I was excited about Isaiah Thompson. You know, once again, you know, played about 20 minutes for us. You know, coming off the bench and did some really good things. So it just created opportunities for other guys. And as a coach, you would, you know, you get to the end and that's their time. And we're just in a different landscape right now in college basketball. You know, you can get to the end with somebody and he'll leave you.
Right.
And like those two guys did, you know, those two guys were our captains the year before. I mean, think about that. You win the Big Ten, you go to the Elite Eight, you get named captains. You don't leave.
Right.
That was just kind of my, like, you know, you have a lot of good things going for you right here. And I had good relationships with both of those guys. And so when that happens, that I think that really points towards the landscape of college basketball more than anything. But those younger guys took it on And they really benefited from those opportunities. And they had, you know, they played really good. We were the youngest team in the Big Ten, I think the fourth youngest team in the whole NCAA tournament.
Well, and you look right now, obviously, at player retention in college basketball. The teams that are picked at the top to start next season, we know, you know, rankings in college basketball can always be fluid, but are right. teams that have guys back, and Purdue, Villanova, UConn, and Stanford are the only four power conference programs to not take a transfer this offseason. Right. How have you been so effective, especially when you have so many capable players, at player retention?
Right. We've probably in the 16 years had the fewest amount of transfers in our league. We've dipped into the fifth year pool just because you get to the spring and you need somebody. Like, you would rather get someone with a college degree that's played college basketball that can fill that void versus who is really available in the spring as a high school player. You'll see elite guys. You'll see about 10 elite guys that are floating around. But if you go through the top 100, you know, you're going to see about 75 to 85% of those guys that have signed. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find that kind of diamond in the rough from a high school standpoint in the spring. Sometimes you can see it internationally, and maybe there'll be a JUCO guy or two, a guy really makes improvements, but there's not a lot of numbers. So we've done that with the fifth years, and that's benefited us. But for the most part, like, just trying to develop them. And then if we're a little bit short, if we can't get who we want, just pumping the brakes and waiting, and then signing somebody in that next high school class, just keep trying to develop guys. I will say, for those schools that didn't take a transfer, the way it's set up, we're all going to have to take transfers. There's just no Yep. way. Like, this comes to us the way it does with everybody returning. Everybody is not going to return going forward. And I don't care where you're at and how you do things or what your culture is. You know, this will open up some things. Everybody wants to play right away, and it's so hard to play right away. And it's just going to affect everybody. So I just don't want that to be something like, you guys don't take transfers. I think those schools you mentioned, well, at some point we're all going to have to take transfers because we're going to be up against it when it doesn't, you know, go in our favor.
Purdue head coach Matt Painter joined the College Hoops Day podcast with John Rothstein. Well, let's get back to basketball for a second. You know, you had, like we talked about, a tremendous season last year, not with the ending that you wanted. You lost in the round of 64 to North Texas. What is the off-season feel after you have a regular season that you feel good about, but it ends with a difficult loss in the first round of the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, it's just, you know, you have that bad taste in your mouth after you – the one thing about losing during the season, like, you can't wait to play that next game, and now you got to sit on it forever. But, you know, I thought North Texas played well. I thought Grant McCaslin did an exceptional job, and they really put us in a bind. They really ISO'd a lot. Going back and watching that tape, man, we had a lot of shots. We missed free throws down the stretch. We missed open shots down the stretch. So we were getting some things offensively that we wanted. I thought they did a really good job of trying to kind of search out some different actions and ISOs to put us in binds. But for the most part, you got to make your free throws, got to make some open shots, got to do a better job on the defensive end. But we didn't lose for a lack of respect for the program. And we signed a player from Grant's JUCO team about 15 years ago, and I've always been a big fan of his, and he's a fabulous coach. And so I really expressed that to our team and let them know, like, they're going to put us in some tough spots here. I go, they have earned their way into this tournament. They're a very good team. Like, this is going to be a dogfight. And it's exactly what it was. And but you just have to give them credit. And hopefully this can allow us to be on edge more and hopefully, you know, play better in the NCAA tournament next year.
Well, and as we touched on, the teams that are going to be picked to obviously go deep into the NCAA tournament are teams that have players back, like Purdue. Other than having everybody back and being more experienced, what are the biggest reasons why you think Purdue will be better this season than it was last?
I would just say the experience is more than anything. You know, I know you mentioned that, but that, I think that really stands out. Like, we had three guys play. You know, in the U-19s in Latvia this summer. You know, Travion Williams played 2 years ago in the U-19. We have another guy that got invited to the U-19 that got hurt, and Trey Kaufman-Wren. That's a really good freshman. And so I just think the experiences that we've had, we have, you know, three players that are, that will be going into, if they start this year, will be 3-year starters for us. You throw in how dynamic Jaden Ivey is, you know, what a tough matchup Zach Edey is. You know, we, I think we had that with Isaac Haas. You know, Isaac was such a tough matchup for people. You know, Zach is more mobile. Zach's a really good rebounder and can do some different things. Travion Williams is a first-team all-league guy that comes back. You know, you just don't see you don't see a lot of first-team all-league guys come back anymore. So when you look at the dynamic of Ivy and Travion Williams and Zach Edey and the, you know, Caleb First and Trey Kaufman Wren coming in here, Mason Gillis started majority of last year. Brandon Newman started a majority of last year. Eric Hunter and Sasha Stefanovic started all of last year. So that's a lot of people right there that you're dealing with. And so I feel very good about, we have a kid named Brian Waddell that's going to redshirt for us this year, 6'7", who I think is going to be a fabulous player for us. So I, you always like your guys, but like, I really like our guys. I think we have a good mix. I think we have a maturity about us. Doesn't mean we're perfect. And, you know, hopefully we can just continue to grow and get better. And we know we're going to get challenged with our non-conference schedule. Then obviously the Big Ten is going to be great again.
Well, you know, you mentioned obviously all the pieces that are back and the experience that you have. And you touched on Jaden Ivey, who had a tremendous freshman season. And, you know, I watched him for the U19 team at Team USA in Latvia this summer. And, you know, the big thing I noticed about him is he can score from all different levels. He's a, you know, a multi-combo scorer. From your perspective, players always make their biggest jump from their freshman to their sophomore season. How does he go from a guy who averaged, you know, 10, 11 points as a freshman to now being one of the best guards in the Big Ten, therefore one of the best guards in college basketball?
Yeah, just, you know, kind of letting things come to him. You know, he's so dynamic that he's going to get opportunities in the open court, in space, in the half court, and not settling more than anything. And knowing he's playing with other good players. I think sometimes those ultra-talented guards, you know, they want to win, and he's a very competitive kid. And sometimes they take it on themselves and just instead of just allowing. You know, we have good, you know, post guys. We have good shooters. We have, you know, good all-around players. So he's got a lot of guys around him. So I think that will be kind of the telltale going forward, how much attention people give to him. If they want to overdo it, he's got to trust his teammates. If they don't, then he's going to be in space a lot playing. But he can get in the paint, and you know, he like you said, like he can make plays. He can score in a variety of ways.
Well, and you know, another guy who can score in a variety of ways, another guy who played for a different country, it was Canada at the U19, you know, World Cup in Latvia, is Zach Edey, who again has a Yao Ming like presence on the court in college basketball, if that's possible. Now, I've covered your program long enough to know that, you know, you've had to try and find ways for very talented bigs to play together. You tried it, I remember, with Isaac Haas and Biggie Swanigan, and I think you and I were at an AAU tournament in Philadelphia, and you were saying how we made it work, but we were better with a guy like Vince Edwards at the four when all things were considered. I understand right. That you're going to try and find ways for guys like Travion Williams and Zach Edey to play together because they're both obviously willing to be on the floor. How do you make sure that when they play together for long stretches, they're playing together effectively?
I think it has to do more than anything the opponent we're playing. I think there are going to be some opponents that you can play them more together. There might be some opponents you can't play them at all together. Mm-hmm. And the game obviously is smaller. So it just when it works for you, just don't say, okay, here's our guys, here's what we're doing. You know, we'll deal with it when it happens. I think that we have enough pieces to where when you have, you know, Trey Kaufman and Caleb First and Mason Gillis sitting there to go along with those two guys. Now we have a lot of options in what we can do offensively and defense. And just being smart about it instead of just saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. You're going to have to deal with it, but then we're going to have to deal with our issues at the other end. I don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense. So just trying to play in, you know, to our strengths, but it's going to depend, you know, on our opponent.
Well, I mean, similar to Jaden Ivey, you know, we saw some of Zach Edey last year and we saw what he did, you know, for Canada this past summer. you know, if he makes a big jump, you know, obviously, you know, from a freshman to sophomore year, he's going to be one of the top stories in college basketball. What have you seen different in his game since obviously he came back from Latvia?
Nothing really. I mean, he's always been aggressive. He puts in a lot of time. And so he works like our guys, you know, a lot of our guys are that way. You know, it's just the time that they put in. You can see how much it means to him. You're still in that learning phase, even though you've played a year. When you go and play USA basketball, you work out with other people and you come back, there's still some things where you have slippage and you have to get it right. I would think that's what's first and foremost. You know, he is going to be I think he's going to have a fabulous year. I think he will be a really good pro. But it's, you know, what kind of pro do you want to be? And I think that's the one thing that I think young people don't quite realize this. And I think Jaden does. Jaden realizes, like, hey, you want to get drafted high and then take 2 to 3 years before you play. Right. You want to get drafted high and be able to play. It depends on who takes you also. There's a lot of things that go into that. But get yourself ready to play in a structured environment at the highest level. And that's just simply being able to do your job and knowing what's going on, being able to play the game and make reads, but have that defensive foundation and work towards those things. So I think that's the most important. He's very confident as a player, and I think that's what the U19's probably helped him with more than anything. Just, hey, I belong. You know, I can compete at this level. I can have a lot of success at this level. But now going forward, when you get those guys, they're talented. Like when you deal with like a Carson Edwards, and like, you know, you got to give some freedom to what they do, but they also have to, you know, be able to do some things to help your team win, especially on the defensive end. I think that's Carson made the most strides in that area. And that's where we need Jaden. Jaden can be an elite defender. You know, he could be just as good of an offensive player as defensive and vice versa. And so that's what, you know, gets you excited, you know, going past college, is that he could be, you know, just a great two-way player as a pro.
And, you know, Matt, another guy, again, who was part of that, you know, freshman class last year, even though he redshirted, but he had a huge role, was Mason Gillis. Now, mm-hmm. he was sentenced to probation, you know, not too long ago. What is mm-hmm. his status in terms of, you know, starting the season and being available when, you know, things kick off in November?
Yeah, he won't play in the our scrimmage against Providence. He won't play in the exhibition game, and then he'll miss our first four regular season games. So, yeah, he obviously made a mistake. He understands it totally, but there's, you know, there's consequences that come with it, and obviously it was a serious offense, and you know, I know he, it really bothered him, and you know, he's really learned from it, and you know, hopefully he can be better because of it. But no, he'll miss the first four regular season games to go along with that scrimmage and exhibition.
And then when you obviously look at other guys too, because there's another player that I think, because so many other guys are getting attention, that is the that is the unsung presence in your program, is Brandon Newman. He didn't have maybe quite mm-hmm. the freshman year that Jaden Ivey did, but you know, you watch this guy play enough and he looks like an all Big Ten player. Why is he maybe unsung now, but he might not be unsung when we get to January?
I just think the attention that other, you know, Travion obviously was all conference, and the other three guys played, you know, in the U19s. A lot of times you just kind of get lost in the shuffle sometimes when you're not playing in the summer, or maybe, you know, he didn't finish his freshman year as well as he started his freshman year. But he did some good things for us. He can really shoot the basketball, really wants to be a good player, puts in a lot of time. So I'm excited about it, but I think he's a, you know, Sasha Stefanovic, him, they're just great players with the personnel that we have. You know, you got a couple really good experience post up guys. You got a dynamic scorer in Jaden Ivey. Now being alongside of them, you know, Eric Hunter's experience of being our lead guard, and Isaiah Thompson's ability to stretch the defense, play a couple positions there. Like, we got some really good pieces in and around those other guys, and that's, you know, that's Brandon to a T, because he can really knock down shots and really stretch the defense.
Purdue head coach Matt Painter joined the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Boilers bringing back everybody of significance from last year's team that earned a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. Which newcomers do you think will have the biggest impact for you, Matt?
I would say the two that I mentioned, Caleb First and then Trey Kaufman. You know, both of those guys are really good players. They both won multiple state championships, and You know, we have a lot of depth, and so that's the, like, you know, we've talked about a lot of people on this call, but they've both done a really good job, and obviously Caleb got to play with the U19 team and just kind of found his way on the team. You know, he led the trials and the most offensive rebounds, most defensive rebounds, got to the free throw lines as, you know, more than anybody in those trials and in Texas. So when you kind of look at the people on the team and, you know, and those numbers, like, really don't jump out to people. But when you start to talk about the other people that were on that court and Kenny Lofton and Chet Holmgren and, you know, Harrison Ingram and the kid from Creighton, I'm drawing a blank here, the big kid that they have. And so they're
Kalkbrenner.
Ryan Kalkbrenner. We were recruiting him. No wonder we didn't get him. I can't remember his name. and so they those guys are really good players. And so for him to have those kind of stats playing with those guys and against each other in those inter-squad games, I mean, that was, to me, that really jumped out, you know, to me. You know, that was great to see. Andy played some four, which, you know, those guys are all going to, you know, they all want to move down a spot, but then you got to guard different people and do different things. And so it's just a learning curve. But, you know, I think Caleb and Trey are going to, you know, really help our team.
Well, you know, we're talking about two front court players that, you know, obviously can help your team, but you've got a team already with multiple front court players and obviously a deep team. From a depth perspective, does this team have a chance to be the deepest that you've ever coached?
Without question. Yeah, that I think that's easy to get, like, to where we are. Like, we're redshirting Brian Waddell, and, you know, he could play. You know, he's a good player. So, like, you know, we're – That's we have 12 scholarship guys right now that I would feel comfortable playing any of them. So
if this is the deepest team that you've obviously, you know, ever coached, or could be the deepest team that you've ever coached, you've obviously got a chance to win the Big Ten. Obviously, Michigan and Illinois, who's going to have two of the maybe top 15 players in the country with Curbelo and Kofi Coburn, obviously have those hopes. As you forecast the league, aside from those three teams, put your analyst hat on for a second, what do you foresee this year, aside from a really competitive league?
Ooh. Yeah, well, you know, for the teams that have been really good since I've been here, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Ohio State, you don't even mention.
Right.
And so it just shows you, like, how good our team is going to be. I think how good our league is going to be. I think Indiana is going to be good. Like, there's some people there. I think Iowa's got a couple young guys that are really good. And, again, you know, they got Bohannon back. I know they lost a lot, too, but I think they can be good. You know, you mentioned Illinois. You know, Michigan, you know, they're going to be tough to go against again, you know. And so, like, it's hard. You're going to look at, you know, Rutgers. Rutgers got their two guys back. Like, who wants to go into Rutgers and play? Like, that's, you know, and 5 years ago, like, that wasn't the case. And, like, Steve's done such a great job. And so they've been a great addition to our league. They're tough. They're hard-nosed. So you could go on and on. I'm probably missing some people here. You know, Maryland, you know, how, you know, Maryland's really got two really good transfers. You know, they lost some guys, lost a kid to the draft, but they also got some guys returned too. And so they're going to be good. And so, like, our league, once again, we just didn't play well in the tournament. And so a lot of people will go and say, well, you weren't as good. And I don't agree with that, because we've all seen leagues struggle and then they get three or four teams in and those three or four teams do well. That's just kind of, you know, just the way the NCAA tournament is. It's a little bit of a crapshoot once you get in there, because everybody's good and you're on a neutral court. And but our league should be, like, just like our team. Like, you know, we didn't do our part, and we should be on edge. You know, Purdue should be on edge because we got beat by North Texas, but the Big Ten should be on edge because we didn't show the whole country what, you know, how we played the whole year. We had a great year. We had a fabulous year, but we didn't play well at the end, and that's on us. And so we got to do better next year.
Well, you know, and that obviously, you know, leads to the urgency to not just play well throughout the season and earn a high seed again in the NCAA tournament, but to play well when you get to the NCAA tournament. And you have perennially put your team and put your program in position to do that. A couple of years ago, you came inches away, literally, from getting over a hump and, you know, getting to the Final Four, and you lost a game in the Elite Eight in overtime to Virginia. That game is always the game that coaches say is a different level and almost a different type of breed when it comes to coaching. I'm curious, how often do you think about that game against Virginia?
I think about it when people like you bring it up. That's when I think about it. So right as it happened, you know, it was, you would go out and speak and everybody would talk about it. And it was this, I mean, you just wanted to grab, you know, number two pencils and just shove them in your eyes. I mean, it was painful because when you go back, a lot of times I always go back and watch games and pick at what I should have done better or prepared them better or made a better decision. So I pick up myself before I pick at anybody else. And you just don't have anything to pick at just because it was just such a high-level game. People don't realize we're up with a minute to go. We're leading with a minute to go in overtime, too. So it wasn't like, you know, sometimes you have those games and it just doesn't go your way and you get into overtime and then it's just you fall apart. Like, we've all had those. So it's just like, golly, why are we even in overtime? We should have won this game. And then you fall apart in overtime. Well, that wasn't the case here. You know, we did some good things in overtime, and they made a couple more plays in that last minute than we did. And but no, it's a hard pill to swallow. But you know, you gotta learn from things and just keep going. And I've been in the NCAA tournament twice, and one time I didn't foul and I got beat, and one time I did foul in the Virginia game and got beat. And so like that, when you kind of go back and look at that, like, I still think it's the right decision. It was such a crazy play that when the ball gets hit, you know, smacked back. I wanted to sub Travion Williams in the game at the time, but he had struggled so bad in free throws. But right. What was crazy was the guy that was shooting free throws didn't miss it on purpose. Mm-hmm. He just missed it. And it was Ty Jerome, and he's a good free throw shooter. So I'm like, you know, do I want him in there? Do I got to burn a timeout to get him out then? Do I want, like, and so I'm like, I don't think he'd miss it. And I'm kind of watching him down there to their bench, and they're not shuffling around or saying something to Tony or anything. I'm like, man, I'm going to stay right here.
Right.
And they smacked it back over the guy I would have subbed him out of for the ball to go back there. But, like, again, like, he wasn't missing on purpose. I didn't think he was going to miss. So I wanted people in there that obviously, you know, we could get the ball in and secure it and get fouled and make our free throws. We also miss a free throw when we get an offensive rebound before and they foul intentional, and that would have put us up four. So like that. So you're trying to kind of weigh that dynamic and weigh the next one. And then obviously they hit that shot at the end and sends us into overtime. And so you're just trying to lift your guys up at that time because you're oh so close. And then they make that play just to get ready for overtime. But that's, those things are tough, man. Those obviously, that's a gray area for a lot of coaches going back and forth. But if I had to do it over with, like I said, like I would still foul there. I think that makes sense once you get into there, is to be able to foul. A lot of things have to happen for it not to work.
Well, and the one thing that, you know, I think was positive about that run in 2019 is you guys were finally healthy for the NCAA tournament. You know, there was a year where you didn't have Robbie Hummel. There was a year where you didn't have Isaac Haas. And I remember we were doing one of these chats the year in 18 that you had Isaac Haas and Vince Edwards and those guys. You felt like in February this was probably your best chance to go to a Final Four, and then obviously Isaac Haas didn't play in the NCAA tournament. I'm curious, and I know this question is being asked in September, from where you sit right now in terms of starting a season with a deck of cards and a roster you have, where do you think this unit stacks up in terms of your best chances of earning a high seed in the NCAA tournament and going to a Final Four?
Well, I think they're right there with the teams that we've had in the past, you know, just trying to project, like you mentioned. I think we have good size. You know, we have a dynamic guard. We have good shooters. We have experience. You have a couple different ways to play.
Yep.
And so, like, you know, you always have some losses. Do you go back to, should I have played differently or should we just have played better? Or, like, you know, what decisions I made? You're going to have, when you have more guys, you don't get set as much. There's a little bit more fluctuation because guys are going to play well or things are going to happen. But you also have that depth where you're not going to go to somebody, you know, you don't believe in. So I would say we're right there. We're definitely deeper than both of those teams, but you only play five at a time. So I don't know if that really, you know, weighs out too much. But I definitely like our chances. Got to be, we got to make more shots, in my opinion. And with that, you know, you have to take good shots. You got to be able to manufacture a good shot. So our ability to manufacture good shots and have that discipline, we love pushing it and shooting it quick when it's there. But I don't like shooting, you know, quick shots that are bad shots that are low percentage. So we're pushing it, and you got to be able to have that discipline. I really believe that we have a group that can – that can play both ways offensively. And the more you can do that, whether you can play in the open court or play in the half court, your shot selection and your ability to take care of the ball should lead to a higher percentage.
Well, you know, you said something interesting. You said even though this could be the deepest team that you've had, that you can only play five at a time. I'm curious, if you were going into, you know, a game like you have at Mohegan Sun or a Big Ten game, how many guys would you feel comfortable playing tomorrow?
Oh, I feel comfortable playing all of them. I'm not going to play all of them. But, like, that's what we got to get figured out before then. And that's what makes it great for competition and practice. So when guys know that, like, well, you got 11 guys walking out there going, hey, man, I'm going to play. You know, no, we're not going to play 11 guys. That's just not right. That's not the way it's going to work. I've tried to play 10 before, and it's hard for me. I've always played probably 9. It's probably been more steady number. If I've went anywhere from 9, it's been to 8. So 9 is probably my number, even though I look at this team and I feel comfortable playing all 11. So that's what's good. Like, normally you have a drop-off somewhere. You're like, he's just not quite as good as that next guy. And I don't feel that about those guys at all. Like, those guys there that are kind of lurking right there together, I think they all could play. They all could start for a lot of people.
Well, final thing, we've talked about, obviously, this team being in position, just like other great teams you've had at Purdue, to have a special run in March. What are the biggest keys, aside from, you know, making more shots between now and Selection Sunday, to be in that same position again?
Right, I would say just to having a defensive identity. When you get into the tournament, I mean, you have to be able to score the basketball. And I know I mentioned that before.
Yeah.
But who are you when you can't score the basketball? Can you still beat a good team? Right. You know, I always talk to our teams about that. When the ball doesn't go in, the ball doesn't go in at some point for everybody. Nobody's right. excluded there. Some more than others, but nobody's excluded. I said, when that happens to us, can we still beat a good team? You know, and that, you know, you get that way. It just takes one game to get out of it. And you get into a game and shots aren't falling. Can you grind it and still win a game? I think trying to grow into a defensive identity to understand and have the maturity that, hey, it's not always going to be perfect, but if we fall in one of those days where it's not going in, we know we have the defensive identity to get it done. So just working towards getting that. Like, even if a team returns all their guys and they played good defense the year before, you still have to grow into it with your next team, and that's what we're going to have to do.
Well, Matt, looking forward to covering it, man. Endeavoring to be in West Lafayette during the preseason, so I look forward to staying connected as always along the way, and thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks, John.
We'd like to thank Purdue head coach Matt Painter for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on Apple Podcasts. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also want to remind you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also a reminder to find and listen to the College Hoops Today podcast on all the popular podcast platforms. Make sure to subscribe, like, and rate the show, and please feel free to leave us comments. And also check out collegehoopstoday.com for breaking news, insight, and analysis on the greatest sport that we have in our society. And time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And our first question comes from Bonna Nation, and it's, John, do you think that with transfers and fifth-year seniors, games are going to be tougher to win because teams will be older? Very good question. I think experience in college basketball, along with player retention, are going to continue to be the traits of teams at tops of polls. Now, do I think we're seeing more player movement than we have really ever before? Absolutely, because of the transfer portal. But with that said, there's a reason why Gonzaga, who has Nembhard and Timmy back, UCLA, who we touched on earlier, has everybody back, Villanova, Kansas, who has four starters back, why those teams are being picked at the top of the polls. Experience and player retention are what you have to keep an eye on when you're looking for teams to play well in college basketball. Our next question comes from Mark Pennell. It's, John, you listed 5 transfers for Texas, but not Tyson Walker on your list of impact transfers earlier this week. That was on collegehoopstoday.com. Why not? Well, it's real simple to me. I look, for all intents and purposes, at transfers right now in a little bit of a different light. What I mean by that is this. I look at transfers as being guys sometimes who are going to be impact players and guys that are going to be under the radar. I will reduce and introduce an under the radar list later in the preseason, but Tyson Walker, you know, for people from the periphery, was very good at Northeastern, is going to have a big role for Michigan State. Still, from everything I've gathered, is not the clear-cut number one starter at point guard. It could be A.J. Hogard as well, who filled in and played point guard last year for Michigan State. So I'm looking at different levels of transfers. I've got impact guys. I got under-the-radar guys. I think that when we see a scenario where we see Tyson Walker right now in the preseason, there'll be an under-the-radar transfer, but I think that could obviously change as time progresses. He is going to play a big role at Michigan State. I've got to see, especially if I can get out to East Lansing, whether or not he is going to win the position first, because usually guys who are going to be impact guys are clear-cut at winning their position. Everything I'm gathering right now, the dust has not settled at Michigan State. Is Gabe Brown and Joey Hauser going to play a lot of minutes? Absolutely. But their lineup and the clay in East Lansing is still definitely being molded for sure. And obviously that's a good thing because it is still mid-September. And five good nuggets this week are being brought to you by Geico. Do you want to rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Now, let's get to those nuggets.
Five good nuggets.
Five.
Six.
No, five. But you were close.
Nugget number one, key on the key. Highly placed spies in Lexington continue to rave about the progression of Kentucky's Keon Brooks. He averaged 19 points and 10 rebounds in game last season where he played 30 minutes or more. He could be the key to Kentucky's whole operation this season. Nugget number two, Swiderman and well-embedded moles of mine in upstate New York continue to rave about Cole Swider. The Villanova transfer should add more shooting to Joe Girard and Buddy Boeheim. I also think it's going to be tailor-made for the 2-3 zone defensively. Nugget number three, no news on Keontae. Florida head coach Mike White informed me recently, a couple of days ago, that Keontae Johnson has still not been cleared for all basketball-related activities. We wish him the best as he continues to recover. Remember, he collapsed and was diagnosed with a heart condition last December. So we send our best to Keontae Johnson. Nugget number four, save the dates. February 1st, 2022 and February 19th, 2022. Those are the two regular season meetings between Texas and Texas Tech. Chris Beard against his old team. Nugget number five, buy stock now. Now, he didn't play last season, but buy stock in Harvard's Noah Kirkwood. He's somewhat of a forgotten man because the Ivy League didn't play last year, but Kirkwood is a Denzel Valentine type at 6'7 in the Ivy League, has NBA potential. That's it for five good nuggets for this week. I'm going to be back on the road again in a couple of days. Going to go see Maryland, the top 20 team. Also get and check in with some of the schools in Philadelphia. So looking forward to getting back on the road. I'd like to thank Purdue head coach Matt Painter for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.